A Treasury of Humorous Poetry, edited by Frederick Lawrence Knowles. Part 2. Widow McShane by Robert Henry Newell, writing as Orpheus C. Carr. Near old Skibbereen, in the gym of the ocean, the Spaker was born, in a queer-looking place, where pigs and a cow were in full locomotion, and six other childers were sleeping in peace. I cannot say much for me father's extraction, because, do you see, he was born in the bogs. But as for me mother, be double transaction, she loved the old chap and the rest of the hogs. 'Twas just as I entered this world of slaughter, me father looked up from his seat by the wall. Says he, "Me sweet Bridget, pray, how is our daughter?" Says she, "Ye old fool, it's no daughter at all." "Och, murther and turf!" he exclaimed in a passion, and struck with his fist on the top of his knee. His ancient dudeen in the corner went smashing, and all on account of perverseness in me. "Ye red-looking thief," says the gentle old sinner, addressing his elegant language to me, "'tis a nice-looking mout that ye have for a dinner." But I was too speechless his meaning to see. "I swore it," says he, "be the soul of St. Peter, a neat little doctor should be me next son. But since ye have chosen a masculine nether, I'm bound to disown ye as sure as a gun. I hope ye will mate with the price of transgression, whatever the creatures you tarry among. And mark me lad, 'tis me private impression, ye never will die till the day ye're hung." "Be quiet, me angel," says Bridget, me mother. "'Tis easy to talk when the mischief is done. Who knows but some day ye may want for a brother, and then ye'll be glad that your girl is a son. The women are prophets, wherever ye find 'em, for many's the time I have helped me poor dad to see the door latchet directly behind him, and sometimes to walk, when the whisky was bad. The way I was bit from the night till the mornin', and then from the mornin' again till to bed, should be unto each seventh son a sad warnin' against getting born till his father is dead. But bettins are said to agree with some people, and sure they were blessings that caused me to grow until I were almost as tall as a staple, and only fell short be an acre or so. One morning when I was engaged in the garden, me father came up with his pipe in his mouth, and, 'Barney,' says he, 'I must crave for your pardon, but tell me, ye spalpeen, what are ye about?' 'Tis hoeing the praties,' says I, with affection. Says he, 'Tis a mighty big mout ye have got, and sure ye'd devour without friend or connection as much as would grow on a 10-acre lot. Me farm, ye know, is not quite so extensive, and though I'm as fond o' ye now as me breath, I'm feared as your appetite's so comprehensive, ye'll stay here to eat till ye're starving to death. Your servant,' says I, like a dignified creature. 'And ho for yourself in the future,' says I. 'For since I am strong as yourself in me stature, I don't mind remarking to ye that ye lie. The world invites me to walk on her bosom, and strive for a place in the council of state. And never has fortune a low-hanging blossom, but I, like a bee, will extract all its sweat.' 'Then walk on the bosom, me darling,' he grunted. 'But walk, mind that ye never go get down in a mout, nor go to the land where an Irishman's hunted by ugly know-nothings that's lurking about.' I scorned to reply to the spacious suggestion, but put me wardrobe in the crown of me hat, and kissing me mother, to aid me digestion, set out on me travels as still as a cat. Ye mind there's a kingdom called Donnybrook, famous. 'Twas there that I went an adventure to meet, and when I arrived I was weary and lame as a beast of the ploughed with no legs to his fate. Bad luck to the fortune that carried me in it, and sure 'tis the memory that gives me a pain, for scarce had I been in the tavern a minute when I fell a victim to Widow McShane. 'Twas she was the landlord that treated me decent, and put me to bed with a brick in me head, and put some more bricks in a bottle adjacent to keep out the cold when me arm was bled. And be the same token I came for to love her, and asked her to thry the high menial line. She called me an insinivatin' young rover, and put her big mout on a fater of mine. Och, murther and ounds, was the divil behind me, to blind me affection and worry me brain? Or was it the course of me father resigned me into the fat arms of Widow McShane? And sure she had childers, the wildest young divils that ever disgraced a respectable place, and one of the me first matrimonial evils was having their scratches all over me face. Me darling, I said to their elegant mother, the childers are rather too forward, said I. When grabbing a poker or something or other, she gave me a whack in the small of me thigh. Because I complained of such singular treatment, she made it appear most uncommonly plain that I was a beast when compared with the statement of all the sweet virtues of Mr. McShane. Och, sure such a life as I led with the creature would make such the patient of madman insane, and often convenient I found in my nature to envy the ghost of departed McShane. If I didn't wear an old shirt for a season, and keep it remarkably rigid and clean, that woman would never be tempted to reason, but talk to the neatness of Mr. McShane. Whenever the night spread about her dark pinions, them childers would chatter like monkeys in pain. And then I was called from me dreamland dominions to comfort the spalpeens of Mr. McShane. If coxcombs and guardsmen made love to me woman, and I in me innocence chose to complain, she'd intimate strongly that I was inhuman, and mention me contrast with Mr. McShane. If I took a shilling to get me some whiskey, and didn't remember to stale it again, be all of the power she'd grow mighty frisky, and threaten to send me to Mr. McShane. I never went out of the house in the morning until it was night of the evening before, because she would give me a delicate warning to manage the childers and scrub up the floor. And when I would venture to spake like an equal and tell her she acted confoundedly main, she'd tell me a story and tell me the sequel, the life and the death of one Mr. McShane. I lived like a beast that is killed be its master, until I was taken with prisons of brain, and then never lightning could travel much faster than I from the relic of Mr. McShane. I came to this country of freedom and progress, and only had been here a couple of hours, when I was elected a member of Congress, or decently asked to be such, be the powers. But I shall go back to me Jim of the Ocean, as soon as me widow is married again, to give a free vent to me powerful emotion, and dance on the grave of old Mr. McShane. Robinson Crusoe by Charles Edward Carroll. The night was thick and hazy when the Piccadilly Daisy carried down the crew and captain in the sea, and I think the water drowned 'em, for they never found 'em, and I know they didn't come ashore with me. Oh, 'twas very sad and lonely when I found myself the only population on this cultivated shore. But I've made a little tavern in a rocky little cavern, and I sit and watch for people at the door. I spent no time in looking for a girl to do my cooking, as I'm quite a clever hand at making stews. But I had that fellow Friday just to keep that tavern tidy and to put a Sunday's polish on my shoes. I have a little garden that I'm cultivating lard in, as the things I eat are rather tough and dry. For I live on toasted lizards, prickly pears, and carrot gizzards, and I'm really very fond of beetle pie. The clothes I had were furry, and it made me fret and worry when I found the moths were eating off the hair. And I had to scrape and sand 'em, and I boiled 'em, and I tanned 'em, till I got the fine morocco suit I wear. I sometimes seek diversion in a family excursion with the few domestic animals you see. and we take along a carrot as refreshment for the parrot and a little cup of jungleberry tea. Then we gather as we travel bits of moss and dirty gravel, and we chip off little specimens of stone. And we carry home as prizes funny bugs of handy sizes, just to give the day a scientific tone. If the roads are wet and muddy, we remain at home and study, for the goat is very clever at a sum. And the dog, instead of fighting, studies ornamental writing, while the cat is taking lessons on the drum. We retire at 11, and we rise again at 7, and I wish to call attention as I close to the fact that all the scholars are correct about their collars, and particular in turning out their toes. The Ballad of the Oysterman by Oliver Wendell Holmes. It was a tall young oysterman lived by the riverside. His shop was just upon the bank, his boat was on the tide. The daughter of a fisherman that was so straight and slim lived over on the other bank, right opposite to him. It was the pensive oysterman that saw a lovely maid upon a moonlight evening a-sitting in the shade. He saw her wave a handkerchief, as much as if to say, "I'm wide awake, young oysterman, and all the folks away." Then up arose the oysterman, and to himself said he, "I guess I'll leave the skiff at home, for fear that folks should see. I read it in the story-book that for to kiss his dear, Leander swam the Hellespont, and I will swim this here." And he has leapt into the waves, and crossed the shining stream, and he has clambered up the bank, all in the moonlight gleam. Oh, there are kisses sweet as dew, and words as soft as rain. But they have heard her father's step, and in he leaps again. Out spoke the ancient fisherman, "Oh, what was that, my daughter?"
"'Twas nothing but a pebble, sir, I threw into the water."
"And what is that, pray tell me, love, that paddles off so fast?"
"It's nothing but a porpoise, sir, that's been a-swimming past."
Out spoke the ancient fisherman, "Now bring me my harpoon. I'll get into the fishing boat and fix the fellow soon." Down fell that pretty innocent, as falls a snow-white lamb. Her hair drooped round her pallid cheeks like seaweed on a clam. Alas for those two loving ones! She waked not from her swound, and he was taken with the cramp, and in the waves was drowned. But fate has metamorphosed them in pity of their woe, and now they keep an oyster shop for mermaids down below. Only 7. A Pastoral Story After Wordsworth by Henry S. Lee. I marveled why a simple child that lightly draws its breath should utter groans so very wild, and look as pale as death. Adopting a parental tone, I asked her why she cried. The damsel answered with a groan, "I've got a pain inside. I thought it would have sent me mad last night about 11. Said I, "What is it makes you bad? How many apples have you had?" She answered,
"Only 7.
"And are you sure you took no more, my little maid?" quoth I.
"Oh, please, sir, mother gave me 4, but they were in a pie."
"If that's the case," I stammered out, "of course you had 11. The maiden answered with a pout,
"I ain't had more nor 7.
I wondered hugely what she meant, and said, "I'm bad at riddles, but I know where little girls are sent for telling taradiddles. Now if you won't reform," said I, "you'll never go to heaven." But all in vain, each time I try, that little idiot makes reply, "I ain't had more than 7. Postscript. To borrow Wordsworth's name was wrong, or slightly misapplied, and so I'd better call my song Lines After Ache Inside. End of part 2 of A Treasury of Humorous Poetry, pages 9 to 17.